Hello, this is Kevin Doherty, your host for the Just Thinking podcast, and I have a wonderful guest today. This gentleman has been a friend of mine for over two decades. We actually both worked in the same district together, Irving ISD, and then I went on to work for Thinking Maps. He attended the training of trainers. We became fast friends, and we've been friends ever since. But I'm so delighted for everyone to get to meet Frank Ramirez, but I'm not going to say too much more about him. I'm going to let him introduce himself to you. So, Frank, tell the folks a little bit about who you are and a little bit about your background as an educator.
Hello. Hey, world. How you doing? My name is Frank Ramirez, and it's no accident that I'm wearing a shirt that says, "Knowledge is Power, Schoolhouse Rock." I've been in education over 25 years. I've recently retired from education. But I'll tell you that I've been in five school districts, one charter school, and everywhere I've been, it's been just a wonderful experience working with kids and families. Other than that, I don't really like talking too much about myself unless we're talking about my kids or the families that I've had the wonderful opportunity of serving. Because it's never about me. It's always going to be about them.
Sure. But you do have one personal child. So tell us a little bit about her.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about my beautiful daughter.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. My beautiful daughter who's first year out of college. As a matter of fact, I'm in her room right now. She allowed me to use her room. So don't let her know that. But that is her mini mouth behind me. No. And that is her jersey. That's Dak Prescott Cowboys jersey that
yes,
she has hanging
up. Nice.
So she's in between semesters right now. She's just finished one full year of college. I've been married to my wife for this year will be 25 years. As a matter of fact, I've been blessed. I can't say enough of that. Been blessed to be able to be in the world of education and working with kids and families, and be blessed to have a beautiful child like I do, yes. and my wife as well.
Well, I have enjoyed watching them through Facebook through the years, mm-hmm. Frank. It's been so wonderful to get to see all the various stages, and I don't know where the time went because your daughter was just a little girl and, you know, in dance class or whatever. Now she's all grown up. So it's crazy.
And she still tells me what to do, Kevin.
Well, good. As a good daughter should. So today we're going to talk a little bit about serving communities. I know your heart, Frank, from the times that we've gotten to visit either on phone calls or on, you know, meetings that we've been part of or conferences through the years. We've stayed pretty closely connected. And, you know, kindness is a word that comes to my mind first when I think of you, because you're just an incredibly kind individual. And I think that kindness comes from kind of that Stephen Covey habit that is to seek first to understand, then to be understood. So your concern is always, as you just explained earlier, about others before yourself. Mm-hmm. And what you can learn from others as opposed to necessarily what they can learn from you, even though there's so much we can learn from you like we're going to today. So a big part of your role as an educator has been serving students, serving the parents and families, serving the communities, because you have a servant's heart. And so I'd like to really talk about the ABCs of this serving community. And that I'd like to start with the A being active engagement. And you and I were talking a little bit before this podcast started recording about your first year as a teacher at John R. Good Elementary in Irving ISD and how you achieved high levels of engagement. And not only that, but incredibly high levels of achievement. So talk a little bit about active engagement, how you achieve it, and how you're able to to lead to great results for the students you serve.
So active engagement, if we're not engaging our kids in their respective learning by listening to them, if we're not engaging our families in the respective learning of their kids, what's being taught to them, if we're not engaging our school and our families, then it's not going to happen. I learned that earlier on at the time when I was my first year teacher, I didn't know any better. And I think you and I talked about that before that. But yeah. One thing I learned over the years, and even when I became a campus principal, administrator, instructional specialist, and those kinds of things, those various roles I went into, I was learning more and more and more that by listening to my kids, they were telling me how to engage them in their education. And that's very powerful. And at the time, of course, I didn't know any better, right? I'm not an expert. I was just doing what I thought was the right thing to do by them, do right by them, right? Do right by kids. And so it's not that simple. It's very intricate, right? It goes back down to reading levels and figuring out strategies and instructional strategies, figuring out the curriculum, modifying the curriculum, accommodating the curriculum, doing whatever it takes,
right?
Doing whatever it takes to get them to learn, that kind of thing. So that's one way. The other, the piece where I got the families involved, because it takes a village.
Sure.
You know, it really does. And is by whenever we would have parent conferences or parent night, I didn't just, and I did this by accident, I didn't just rely on those events. Mm-hmm. I would call parents to come in and see and meet with me as a first year teacher, just to come and see me. And hey, let me tell you how what your child is doing and how I feel that my belief system, you can help at home, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then it happened right away. Well, my success rate of that didn't happen like right off the bat. It takes a while because they didn't know me. They didn't trust me, right? They don't know who I am. Some guy that's teaching my kid, you know, they don't know who I am. Right. So I had to work up to build that trust with them, you know? So,
sure.
But as a campus principal, obviously it was on a much different level.
Sure.
Now I'm engaging all families through community, through events, through PTA meetings, PTO meetings, your concerts, you know, mm-hmm. and then I would just have literacy nights, those kinds of things. And that's how I was engaging parents. And I also had an open door policy as a teacher and as an administrator on any level. I had an open door policy, mm-hmm. right? I was administrator with pre-K principal all the way to high school and middle school and elementary between. I had an open door policy. So parents could come see me anytime. It wasn't like, I mean, they could drop in, right? And if I wasn't busy with somebody, then obviously, you know, I would see them. But it was important to me, Kevin, that I saw them, and it was important that they saw me.
Yes,
so that matters to me. That human connection.
You and I were talking a little bit before we started recording about spending time with your parents, and you said in many instances it was the mom that was there. Present, mm-hmm. Sometimes mm-hmm. serving as the only parent and supporting the kids. And you talked about what role you played in that as a support to the moms, as well as to their kids that you were teaching in the classroom. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes. The role that I played was so we talked about building relationships first. So it mattered to me, and at the time I didn't realize it was happening, you know, but it mattered to me that they trusted me. In order for them to trust me, I need to be present and they needed to know what was going on. They needed to be present. So it mattered that we were always connecting on what the focus was, their child learning, you know, and not learning. Mm-hmm. And if the child is not learning, what am I doing about it? Because it's on me.
Sure.
And I took that responsibility on.
Yes.
So some of the things that we used to do was when I would call a parent to come in and meet with me, I would specifically, we would take out the work. I showed them the work. I would explain to them how we were getting the answer or what the goal was in mind. Mm-hmm. Like if the goal was for the child to, I don't know, answer an equation in a certain way to use it, a certain strategy. It was important to me that the parent knew how we did it together in the classroom, because when the child goes home and the child's working on whatever the child's working on and he has questions, then maybe the mom can step in and help out.
Right.
The challenge was obviously is I work with parents, Kevin, that they worked okay. two, three jobs.
Right.
So whenever the moms came in, they could come in. Whenever they couldn't come in, sometimes kids were left home with older brother, older sister watching them.
Right.
You know, and so it was that kind of thing. So whoever was at the house, mom made sure, or she at least they would tell me. Or and I had a couple of kids. It was just dad, you know. A couple of kids that have parents, you know, both sets of parents, but for the majority, it was just the moms, and they would, you know, we would have conversations about what we could do to help them out. But I didn't rely on that though. Mm-hmm. So what I would do, I didn't rely on that. I just say, okay, you know, this is what we're going to do, and this is what you can do at home. But now, when I knew in my head that when they would come to school, I was still going to pick it up,
right?
And I wasn't going to rely on what happens at home,
right?
Because I learned. I didn't know this at Rydex. I didn't know my culture. I didn't know the culture I stepped into, but I learned real quick, you know, the culture, and I assimilated to that culture.
Yes.
To help empower that culture.
So what did you do? So you, when you made the shift to an assistant principal and then a principal, how did you work to ensure that that same work ethic, that same approach, that same focus on active engagement, building relationships, and an empowering culture was pervasive throughout the entire building that you were leading?
Because that was a through line.
Okay.
So no matter, and I saw it earlier on in models, you know, I saw it with Dr. Jennings' model at John R. Good Elementary. Mm-hmm. I saw it with John Rose over at Deza Valley Middle School. I saw it with Rick Nolley at Sam Houston Middle School. Mm-hmm. I saw it, you know, in other places, you know, I had real good models in front of me who taught me, not in a classroom, but just by practicing, by being real,
yeah,
you know, what that looks like. So I knew the conversations, you know, I knew what they needed to sound like, what they needed to look like. I knew but now the question is, was I able to translate that into my own way of leadership? Which, you know, so when I saw that, that's all I knew.
Right.
I didn't know anything else.
Right.
And then I saw it in a lot of the trainings, you know, I learned a lot about empowerment education through thinking mats, quite frankly. You know, we talked about trainer training,
yep,
remember?
Yep.
And a lot of that, the through line in thinking mats at the time for me was empowerment education.
Sure.
Because you're empowering a kid to be able to think before they speak, before they write.
Yes.
So when I made that transition to a grade level, a campus level rather, leadership role, administrator, it was like that's just what had to happen. So what instead of having 25 kids in my classroom, as you know, so to speak, then now I have a grade level, which I was in charge of a grade level, which is 250 kids, right? Mm-hmm. And then on the much bigger scale, I had 750 kids, right? Yeah. At a middle school, or an elementary was 600 kids, or you know, high school was, you know, 2100 kids, or whatever the case may be. But the fact of the matter is that I saw the models before. Yeah. I saw superintendents. I saw superintendents who I learned from. You know, I look at a guy who, Dr. Arturo Amandades from Cal Allen ISD, who taught me very much about a community, mm-hmm. who taught me about empowerment education.
Sure.
I learned from Mr. Jack Singley, the late great Jack Singley, you know, who taught me a lot about people.
Yes.
You know, he used to always tell me, Frank. And he'd go, Frank, let me tell you something, you know. He was real high on emotional intelligence. You know, it doesn't matter what you go through. It matters how you react to it. You know,
yep.
That's just one of the things I learned from him. But I learned from him. I learned from Dr. Avery. You know,
yes.
Dr.
Rose Avery, our mutual friend. Yes.
Who, by the way, learned from who worked with Dr. Amandades, I think, at some point in his career.
Yes, because he's from the Corpus area.
Mm-hmm, and I didn't know that. Yes. You know, when I went to Maynard Independent School District, I didn't know Dr. Avery. That I didn't know him at all. Like I knew him, but I didn't know him. But anyway, so I saw a bunch of models, you know, across across my career, little things here and there from other people that did things, you know, that did right by people, and you know, and that I just picked up what I could from everyone that I learned from, superintendents I worked with, and just did the best I could, you know. With it, you know, I learned from a guy named Kendall Miller, one of my campus principals over in Fort Worth ISD. I was his assistant principal, and he was very much into building relationships.
Okay.
Oh my goodness, yeah. And so when I had the opportunity to become a principal, you know, it was just I was so blessed to have seen models of what it looks like and what it can be like. Now, was I challenged with that as a campus principal? Absolutely, I was, because I wasn't those people.
Sure.
And I had to make it my own.
But you did pay attention. I think it speaks to that whole idea of seeking first to understand, then be understood. So while you are serving under the leadership of these various individuals, whether it's principals, superintendents, you know, people in central office like Tony Garza, mm-hmm. and others, you are learning from them. You are watching mm-hmm. what they're doing. You're listening to what they're saying, incorporating mm-hmm. it into your own leadership when you were placed in those leadership roles. You know, another thing about you, I remember spending some time after I stopped doing the map thing and I started getting into the augmented virtual reality. We reconnected over that. And you were at the New Tech Middle School at the time. Yeah. And so so you were all about the latest and greatest and being a, what did you call it, a future forward thinker or leader. Talk to us a little bit about what it meant to be a future forward thinker, leader, because those who are listening may be like you were. They're aspiring leaders themselves, and they may be able to learn from you and what you're sharing when they step into their leadership roles.
So a future forward thinker is something that I, is a concept that I picked up on rather quickly from again, I'm going to go back to the kids, from our kids, because we're teaching right now, what we're teaching kids the here and the now for their future. But in order to be a future forward thinker, you have to be able to understand what's going to happen 5, 10, 15 years and try to get them ready. We used to hear the whole adage, you know, 21st century learner. Well, we're already in the 21st century. So it's about going further than being a global game changer. A wonderful guy who I subscribe to as much as I can, Raymond Nolte. You might know him.
Yeah, I think I know that guy. And when you use that term, I thought, where have I heard that before? So yeah,
Raymond Nolte. He's one of the leading experts in future forward thinking. You know, and there's a lot of experts out there much like him that say the same thing. You know, we have to keep ourselves always in front of the prize. We can't just settle for the here and the now. We have to, and I'm using layman's terms. He says it much eloquently. Trust me. Trust me. But we have to keep it. We have to keep going further and further and further because we don't know. We work with the future. We're fortunate to work with the future. We won't touch, right? But we have to get them as ready as much as possible. Future forward thinker allows you to not settle. It allows us to continue having that ambition, that passion of wanting to challenge our kids, keep on learning. You know, when I had the wonderful opportunity and being blessed to work at Manning New Tech Middle School, I learned from a guy who was the principal next campus next to me. His name is Bobby Garcia, who was the Manning New Tech High School principal. I learned so much from him about New Tech. I learned more from that guy about New Tech than I learned from, and I learned a lot from the New Tech Network, but I learned so much from it because he was, I guess maybe because our campuses were next to each other, so I can go to him, that way, you know. And what I learned from him was the idea that learning never seems to stop. It always seems to exist. The here and the now, and not just the here and the now, the future. So having all these, being exposed to all these wonderful opportunities just gave me more passion to continue learning what I'm learning, you know, for the kids, not for me, right? Well, but for the kids. So that's what a future forward thinker is.
And when you mentioned it earlier, I kind of smiled a little bit because I was thinking of Ray McNulty, another great friend, and just so excited of what he's talked about on this very podcast. I'm just thinking about that very topic. And one of the things that he talks about is the pull of the past. That one of the things that keeps educators so often from the push to the future and being a future focused thinker learner is this pull of the past. So, and it keeps kind of taking us back some as we're trying to move things forward. So how did you engage that tug of war with the pull of the past and the push toward the future?
Because for me, what happened was it was so irrelevant to be pulled into the past. You know, for me to keep things status quo was so irrelevant, especially with today's time. And I learned so much of that. You know, not just in when I was at New Tech Middle School, but also and I was starting to see glimpses of it prior to, and then even afterwards. I had a wonderful opportunity to work here at San Antonio with Dr. Eduardo Hernandez, superintendent, wonderful guy, great guy, you know, and his thinking is a lot of future forward thinker. His thinking is like that. When you see Dr. Hernandez from Edgewood ISD think and you hear him speak, you know he's a future forward thinker because you can't fake it. And so when I came up to Edgewood, you know, when I was blessed to lead one of his campuses, he gave me the opportunity. I saw that as a serendipitous because of my life's work, Evan, is future forward thinking. You know, it's getting our kids beyond the spectrum, so to speak. You know, beyond what they know they can achieve. And just coming to Edgewood and listening to Dr. Hernandez, learning from Dr. Armandade, learning from Dr. Avery, learning from Mr. Singley, you know, learning from all these wonderful teachers along the way and Dr. Jennings, you know, and people of that nature, mm-hmm. Ray McNulty, who he doesn't know me. I met him one time, you know, I think in a Zoom meeting, and that was it. And after that, I never engaged with, but I try to respond to a lot of his work on there, but yeah. So for me, it's irrelevant to stay in the past, you know, build on the past, right? Build on the past, learn from the past, you know, in the present, so that way you can build for the future. And so it was, so for me,
it makes sense that you were principal of a new tech school, because that sounds mm-hmm. like a more future focused approach. Our schools were built based on the needs of the industrial era, right? So sort of that factory mm-hmm. approach and setup and configuration. But we're now in the AI era, right? So I don't know how mm-hmm. much you've been delving into AI, what your thoughts are about it as a future-focused thinker yourself. I understand some people express some fear around it. And of course, me with a strong background in critical thinking, one of my fears was that would this serve to eliminate the focus on critical thinking and lead towards students becoming more consumers of information and learning rather mm-hmm. than thinkers about the information. So what are your thoughts talking about being future focused on the fact that we're now in the AI era?
So we're always going to need a teacher mm-hmm. regardless, you know, regardless, going into the AI era, you know, and I think it's a wonderful, wonderful experience for our future mm-hmm. in life, in this life as humans. Having said that, we're always going to need someone to be able to program, to be able to teach, to be able to engage with the AI. You know, I have no fear of it because it only opens up opportunities mm-hmm. for everyone. You know, I hear what both sure. sides are saying. One side is saying it's going to eliminate. It could eliminate jobs. It could eliminate thinking. You know, I read something, gosh, a couple of years ago, as a matter of fact, where doctoral programs were afraid that students would doctoral candidates would start using AI sure. to write their dissertations. Right. But now there's software that's able to determine whether or not that was human generated or AI generated, which is a good thing. Either way, you know, to me, thinking that the one thing you can't eliminate is someone's thought process. I mean, I can't tell mm-hmm. you how to think, Kevin. I can only tell you what I feel, what I right. think, my belief systems, yes. my opinions. Like, you're going to make that determination whether or not you think I'm right or wrong or whatever. And regardless of what kind of, like even when we're going to new tech, I'll give you, we were project-based learning. Project-based learning is what we do at work. We do that. You sure. do it at your work. I do it at my work. Project-based learning. They got together. They worked on the project and they learned how, whatever it was they're learning based on the teaks. And we did it through projects. We did it through we would come back and the kids would come back and then once they did a project and they would rehash and they would tear it apart, bring it back together, do some more research, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They would go through steps, and then they would present at the end, present what their findings were, right? You know, at the time, you know, that was innovative. You know, it's been innovative, but then again, the new tech network has been around for years. So it wasn't innovative for some parts right. of our world, but it's innovative for parts. AI is no different, in my opinion. again, my belief system, what I'm reading, what I'm learning about it. I just retired this year. Doesn't mean I won't ever go back again. You know, that's it. It all depends on what the good Lord says right now, but we'll see. But having said that, my thoughts on that is I have no fear of it, because at the end of the day, Kevin, we're human beings, and we have to think, you know, right. No one can take that away from us. I'm not going to submit an AI generated report knowing this, sure, not my work. The AI community, it's a support tool. Amen. It's not detailed.
You know, it's funny you're saying that, because my new work, I think you and I talked about it a little bit, is really all about doing the thinking first before you submit your thinking to the AI solution to generate some type of output. And when you're doing the thinking first and you're organizing your thoughts, my new venture, NeuroPoints, that's what it's all about, is putting all of that together before you input it to the AI. But think about it. If I've done all that thinking first and then AI generates a written output, you better believe I'm going to want to edit that, even if I'm not told to do it, because I want to make sure that it really reflects the thinking that I fed in to the AI. So is it going to streamline this process for me as a learner? Perhaps. And if it does that, well, then aren't we looking for ways in which to streamline and become more efficient in every aspect of life, all the things we do, not a shortcut necessarily, but a way to streamline it so we can be more efficient, and then we can be more balanced with our time so that we can maybe have more time to enjoy those aspects of life that make us human. So, you know, Frankie, we're coming to the close of this particular time slot for this episode, but I know we're going to do this again soon. As I've done with Dr. Ray McNulty, we came back again two or three times. So, but for purposes of this episode, where we've talked a lot about community, about the importance of engagement and building those relationships and building that culture in your schools, as you have so beautifully described it, from your classroom to the schools that you've led, is there anything else about which you're just thinking that I didn't give you an opportunity to address during the course of this conversation?
I think we touched on everything pretty good. You know, but the only thing I would add, if I could, is I would just say, you know, life is about time. You know, and no matter what we do in life, you know, it depends on how we spend it or how we waste it. If we're gonna be so concerned with what's going on in the past, then I think we're gonna be wasting our time. Think about how to improve our life while we're our time in life, being a future forward thinker. And because when we talked about the ABCs earlier, you mentioned the active engagement. We talked about the building relationships and the culture building. All of that is about time. We don't have that much time with our families and our kids in any given school year. Mm. 9 months, I think. You know, every second counts. Mm. Every minute counts on teaching and learning. And it matters. And it matters because our relationships with each other matter, because time is something that we can't ever replace, no matter how much money you have or how much resources you have. Time is the one thing that we cannot ever replace and take back. So how we spend time with each other, it matters. To me, it's about the human relationship, the human connection. It's always been about that. I'll tell you, I'm not the best teacher out there, nor am I the best principal out there, nor the best educator out there. I'm a learner first before I'm a teacher. But the one thing I will tell you is, what matters to me more than anything in this world is the relationship that you and I have, Kevin, that I have with my wife, my daughter, my colleagues, everyone else, because life is about time, and that's what matters to me.
Beautiful note on which to end, my friend. Thanks for being part of Just Thinking.
Well, thank you for having the opportunity, and what a blessing it is to be on Just Thinking podcast. You know, this is something that I never thought of. To be asked to be on, but I appreciate you very much, Kevin. You know how much I love you,
thank you, brother.
You know, And God bless you. And
all right. God bless. Thank you.
Take care of yourself.